The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
There are enemies of Western civilization. Who are these people? Are they the Muslims? Are they the Jews? Are they, you know, whatever people have always... No. They're not the Muslims. They're not the Jews. They're not the blacks. They're not whatever group you're blaming. They're any individual who doesn't acknowledge the human soul. Period. That the rights begin and end with the individual, not the group. Therefore, an attack on Western civilization looks like this. It's tribalism. It's identity politics. It's DEI. It's whatever. It's Zionism. It's any belief system that begins with the understanding that one group is morally superior to other groups. We don't think in terms of groups as Christians or Westerners. We think in terms of the individual. It's literally that simple. And the reason it's important to say this out loud is because there are so many interests vying for the mantle of defender of Western civilization. What does it mean to defend the West? I'm a Western, you know, Netanyahu. I'm a defender of Western civilization. No, you're its enemy. Of course. You're literally its main enemy. Why? Because I don't like you. It has nothing to do with that. The reason that Netanyahu is an enemy of Western civilization is because he believes and has said out loud that we're fighting these people because of how they were born, because of their inherent evil. We don't believe in that. We believe every person is inherently flawed, but salvageable, because God made every person. Why are the Nazis bad? The Nazis are bad because for that exact same reason. And so if you want to defend the West, you defend a single proposition, and everything emanates from that proposition. The individual has rights, which were given to him by God. Period. You don't have to be a Christian to defend that principle. There are a ton of Muslims and Jews and everybody else who believe that. So it's not about hate this group, hate that group. All of that is anti-Western.
There it is, Tucker Carlson from a few days ago, taking straight aim at Netanyahu as being the enemy number one of Western civilization. It's not the Ayatollah, it's not the communists, it is the leader of the one and only Jewish state in the Middle East, the only place in the Middle East where you can walk around and wear what you want, where you can walk around and go to any type of religious service that you want without fear of reprisal. It's him. And it's Israel that are actually the ones that are fighting this war against Western civilization. Is it really? You're actually leading the charge to defend Western civilization, as Netanyahu says, and Tucker says you are the culprit number one trying to defeat it. Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. I'm Brent Nachtigall, filling in for Mr. Stephen Flurry. It's good to be with you this day after the day of Thanksgiving here. It was celebrated in the United States, and I'll be with you for today's program. Just going to that clip. It's a bit long, but I think it shows you what Tucker Carlson's been doing for the past about 6 months. I feel even bad showing you a Tucker Carlson clip just because the clips have gotten more and more and more and more and more unhinged to the point that it's kind of like unnecessary. I'm not trying to paint him as the one lone bad guy in this, but you can see the progression of the thinking. One thing that he said there that you think about, well, is that really true? Does Netanyahu believe that these people are born inherently evil? That is, the people in Gaza, they're born inherently evil. It's in their DNA. The racism that he has is in his DNA. As he would say, very similar to what something Obama said about white people in America, that racism is in their DNA. Is it really in Netanyahu's DNA? Well, what's in Tucker Carlson's? What's in his mind right now? Now, if you think about Gaza, and you think about the people that have died there, even the innocent people that have died there, in terms of not being ones perpetuating these acts. I mean, Netanyahu's position is, You have to fix the whole place because we're in the third generation now of Palestinian propaganda where people have taught their kids, who have then come around and taught their kids, that the Jewish people need to be hated. Jewish people need to be removed. They are a scourge. They are a cancer. It's not about, you know, Palestinian self-determination, Palestinian statehood. It's about if there's a Jew, you need to go up to that individual and you need to remove those individuals. Now, Tucker keeps on going further and further down the rabbit hole with this. And you know, in some of his clips, you've been seeing him talk about this concept and having guests on his show that talk about this concept of the greater Israel, how Israel is not actually fighting against a war against Hamas in Gaza because of what it did to the state of Israel, but rather it's using the Gaza war as a launching pad to expand its borders into Lebanon, into Syria, all the way across to Egypt. And if it is not stopped, well, then, you know, it's the whole world. It's the whole world. And I'm just amazed at how fast this progression of Tucker Carlson and others has gone down the rabbit hole of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. I won't say it's anti-Semitism, it's anti-Zionism, of course, right? But this has been done time and time again in history, of course. We've seen it happen time and time again in history. And it is a unique evil in its power, I think, is what you're seeing. To the point that it is an addiction, that some people kind of open the door to this concept. There's a lot of bad things happening in our country, and I think it's probably one or two Jews' fault. Well, maybe it's the whole state of Israel's fault leading us into these foreign wars. And then it goes down this progression to where you actually will see the Jewish people, Jewish religion, and the state that is full of the Jewish people as the enemy. And you'll see actually a democratically elected leader in Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, and the one that shares so much biblical foundations with the nation of the United States, you would actually see him as the number one threat in the world against Western civilization. It's Netanyahu. Now, this is the progression of this anti-Semitic drug. Once you're hooked on it, you need more and more and more and more and more, and it goes further and further and further, and you become more and more and more illogical. And that's what we've seen with Tucker Carlson. And so if America's being oppressed, if we've got all these foreign entanglements, it has to be those pesky Jews once again that are drawing us into it. This is his position. And so we need to cut off that relationship. This is really interesting. This is from Mein Kampf. Of course, this is what Hitler wrote. I think it was published in 1926. I don't have it in my notes. But he said, if the Jew is victorious over the other peoples of the world, his crown will be the funeral wreath of humanity. And this planet will, as it did thousands of years ago, move through the ether devoid of men, is what Hitler said. One other quote from Mein Kampf. I've got it further in my notes, but I want to read it now. It says, when the Zionists try to make the rest of the world believe, this is Hitler, 1925. This is two decades before the Zionist state even exists, the Jewish state even exists. When the Zionists try to make the rest of the world believe that the new national consciousness of the Jews will be satisfied by the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine, the Jews thereby adopt another means to dupe the simple-minded Gentile. If the Jews actually, you know, convince us that all they want is a state, then the Gentile mind, you're being conned again. No, the Jews want more than that. And this is what, you know, Tucker's guests are saying. They have not the slightest intention of building up the Jewish state in Palestine so as to live in it, says Hitler, before the state of Israel even exists. They don't just want to live there. It's all part of this nefarious plan where they want to control the world. Want to control the United States, even, it seems. What they really are aiming at is to establish a central organization for their international swindling and cheating. See, it's not about a homeland for the Jews, which is the basic definition of Zionism. If you're a Zionist, you believe in that Israel should be the national home of the Jewish people. as it has been the national home of the Jewish people for 3,000 years plus. And there's been Jewish habitation there for that time. You're an indigenous people. You eventually are going to get a state when you actually are given a state by the international bodies that exist, League of Nations, the Madrid Conference in 22, given a state, 48, given a state, or 45, voted on by the UN, given a state. That's not enough. And then you're accepting this tiny little slither of a state back then, not even what they were promised originally. And then you actually fight a defensive war in 1948, fight a defensive war in 1967, fight a defensive war in 1973, and you take some territory away from the enemy, territory that was actually going to be given to you initially when the League of Nations came together, and you are painted as the aggressor. That's where we're at. It's not about a Jewish homeland. It's not about the Jews wanting to stay and wanting to have a homeland to escape the pogroms against them that have existed for 2,500 years, whether it's the Persians under Haman, or it's Antiochus Epiphanes in the 2nd century BC, or it's the Romans in the 70 AD, or in the 2nd century AD, or it's whether you're escaping from the Spanish, the Inquisitions, the 14th, 15th century, you're escaping from Russia before World War II, World War I, and then you're escaping from Germany. No, the Jews don't want just to have a state of their own so that they can live in peace amongst themselves without being inside of a country, another people's country. That's not what they want. They want to control the world. This tiny little fraction of a population, it wants to control the world. That's what the main, basis of anti-Semitic tropes has been for a long, long time. And this is what Tucker Carlson is now believing. This is what he is thinking. Obviously, the Palestinian cause, there is natural, I would say, desire amongst many Palestinians to have their own self-determination. But how does that exist next to an Israel? That's the big question. The Palestinians have often said, many of them, that they're not willing to recognize a Jewish state, because they actually believe that they should be there on that land, not next to the Jewish state. Now, it's just really interesting, those comments that I read from Mein Kampf, that it's really about this greater project that Israel wants to do, take over the world, swindle the rest of the world. This is the kind of mindset that Hitler actually wrote down that motivated the Holocaust. But then you can see that mindset exists even in the enemies of the state of Israel today. I mean, this is how it's gone on for a long time. Golda Meir, the former foreign minister and then prime minister of Israel, addressed the UN in 56. She talked about how Egyptian leader Nasser, in the pockets of some of his soldiers, were copies of Mein Kampf. 1982, they were fighting against Palestinians in southern Lebanon. They found Mein Kampf among them as well. In 1999, the Palestinian-controlled territories, this is like in Ramallah and such in the West Bank, a study was published saying that Mein Kampf is a bestseller. So this isn't about anti-Zionism, meaning anti-Jewish state. This is about we can't let the Jews have any power at all. No self-determination, no power, because how are they going to use that power? It's going to be used to swindle the rest. And then what do we find motivating a lot of what the Hamas terrorists were being indoctrinated on? It's the same idea over and over again. Palestinian statehood is just, what the West is using as, this is the reason why Palestinians fight against the Jews, because those Jews have defrauded the Palestinians of a state, even though that defies, history or logic of what the Palestinians were offered. At the same time, Israel was offered in 1948, in 1945, they were going to have a state that was inside a tiny little bit of Israel, not even the West Bank, not even, Jordan. They were going to give a little bit of a slither of land right next to a Palestinian state, a Palestinian Arab state, I should say, not a Palestinian state yet. Palestinian Jews, Palestinian Arabs, they lived in this geographic area called Palestine. Jews say, I know it's tiny, this tiny segment. Not what we want. We don't even get control of Jerusalem, but we'll accept it. It's something. We'll be able to rule over ourselves. Palestinians say, no, we're not going to accept our state. We're going to fight against them. And so at every turn, you know, they're fought against the idea of Israeli statehood. But then if you get back to, okay, well, what's motivating the mindset of the Arabs? And what mindset have many of the Arabs, not all, many of the Arabs been captive to for so long, particularly the Palestinian Arabs? It's this. It's the same mindset that was brought out and motivating what happened in World War II. And so just after the war, month after the war started, 2 years ago now, you had Mein Kampf showing up in different places in the Gaza Strip, IDF soldiers finding it and saying, well, hang on a second. Is this really about them just not accepting or not wanting or wanting their own state? Or is this about wanting to rid the Jews from this land? This is what Israel's president said, Isaac Herzog, just a month after the war began. You can play the next clip.
We are extremely agonized. We're a nation which is an optimistic nation. We're a peace-loving nation, and we strive for the inclusion of our nation in the region as such. And we have a nation that have contributed and will always contribute to the well-being of humanity. And all of a sudden, our world was shattered because many of our beliefs in the fact that we can live side by side with Palestinian neighbors were shattered. In that morning, the most horrific atrocity since World War II took place. And the many of the casualties were the biggest proponents and supporters of peace ever in the history of Israel. And they were all butchered and chopped and killed and abducted and raped. And the amount of pain and suffering and the horrific information that flows ever since, because Hamas had filmed it all and broadcasted it all live and also afterwards on their cameras, on their bodies, is unending. You have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people supporting, by their demonstrations, supporting Hamas. I want to show you something exclusive, Laura. So this is Adolf Hitler's book, translated to Arabic, Mein Kampf. It's the book that led to the Holocaust and the book that led to World War II. This is the book that led to his victory in elections in Germany, which led to the worst atrocity of humankind, which the British fought against. Well, this book was found just a few days ago in northern Gaza in a children's living room, which was turned into a military operation base of Hamas on the body of one of the terrorists and murderers of Hamas. And he even marked, he wrote notes, he marked and learned again and again Adolf Hitler's ideology of hating the Jews, of killing the Jews, of burning the Jews, of slaughtering the Jews.
So again, what I'm trying to get you to see is that, you know, this is not about one state and another people not having a state. The ideology that is motivating these people to fight against the Jewish state is this book. Is this idea that the Jews are trying to control everything, that if the Jews have their way, it'll get to the point that we don't actually have any human beings on the earth. There'll be destruction everywhere. This is the concept. And anti-Zionism is just really a big cover for more pushing more of this ideology. And we see this ideology creeping all over the world. And this is why Netanyahu would come out and say he wants everyone to recognize that, yes, this is, they're fighting against us, they're anti-Jew first, but they are really against not just the Jewish people, but it's the values of the Jewish people. And then Tucker Carlson's going to come along and say, well, in America, the Muslim extremists aren't actually against us. The terrorists aren't actually against us. They're against the Zionists, they're against the state of Israel. And he's trying to separate America from and say it's not about the Judeo-Christian values, because we have Christian values, they have Jewish values. But what you see on the streets of America is this same battle coming forward. I mean, I just need to mention quickly that one of the people that was shot in Washington, D.C. just yesterday died. the U.S. Army Specialist Sarah Beckstrom, just 20 years old, one of the people that was gunned down. She died. The other individual is fighting for his life right now. And, you know, when I saw this scene of what took place in Washington, D.C., I mean, I lived in Israel for 8 years or so, and a lot more. And I'm just kind of used to this concept of a terrorist attack with terrorists coming on, mowing down Jewish people. This happens with fair consistency once every couple of months or so, even in the territories where Israel is in full control. And I just saw this happen. I'm like, this is just the same about what's going on in Israel. And here it is in Washington, D.C. And it's interesting because why is it happening in Washington, D.C.? Well, we know we've gone through the chants, death to Israel, death to America. But I thought it was just about the Zionism. I thought it was just about they don't believe in Israel having a state. So why do people come along and they fight in the United States if it's not against the whole Western idea? And they see America as leading this. Obviously, they do. And, you know, Tucker Carlson might come along and say, well, this guy and the other terrorists that attack in the United States, it's because of our relationship with the Jewish state. That's what he's trying to get. So if we want to divorce ourselves from attacks from the Muslim extremists, then we cut ourselves off from Israel, it's going to be fine. They won't see us as supporting the state of Israel. They'll have no reason for attacking us because it's just about they don't like the self-determination. It's just about the idea that the Palestinians need to have a state and the Jews are in the way and they're fighting against the Jews. So why are we even getting involved in this war? This is what he's trying to say, but the ideology behind these people is it's not just about the Jewish state. It's about the whole value system that underpins their religion. And you see on their fighters, they like capture something from World War II. Well, they capture something from Hitler. They capture some of that text. And it is what feeds their ideology. And when I saw that, you know, some of the footage of that, I'm like, well, this just looks like Israel. But contrary to Israel, I mean, the United States is just totally unprepared to fight any type of terrorist uprising that Israel is prepared to because they've been fighting it for decades now. It's very, very disconcerting what could happen. This is, if you don't agree with me, this is Osama Hamdan. He is a member of Hamas's Politburo. So he's not actually based in Gaza, but he's one of their leaders. This is what he said on November 10th about this holy war or jihad that they're fighting. So this is just from a couple weeks ago. Clip 3.
ما كتب في تاريخ جهاد أمتنا أن نساء قتلت أو اغتصبت أو أن أطفالا حرقوا. هذا بالعكس كان العنوان أن هذا الدين جاء رحمة وما أرسلناك إلا رحمة للعالمين ليس للمسلمين فقط للعالمين. وبالتالي جرت محاولات كثيرة وتاريخ متواصل من أجل تشويه فكرة الجهاد في ثقافتنا وفي واقع أمتنا لأن أعداءنا أدركوا أن الجهاد هذا راسخ في ديننا وعقيدتنا وأننا بذلك ننتصر عليهم. أنا أظن أنه بدأت صورته تتألق من جديد وأنا أعتقد أن هذا سيكون له ما بعده ليس في فلسطين وحدها وإنما على صعيد أمتنا وبكل وضوح كل إنسان يعتقد أنه يجب أن ينتصر لفلسطين عليه أن يضع نصب عينيه أن يكون مجاهدا حيث يمكن وكيفما أمكن من أجل أن ينتهي هذا الاحتلال وأن ينتهي هذا المشروع الصهيوني الذي يحتل فلسطين ويهدد الأمة ويهدد المنطقة ويعتدي عليها في كل مكان.
It's just so interesting. He's just saying that the holy war is beginning to shine again. Jihad is beginning to shine. Anyone, anywhere that believes himself to be a holy warrior needs to fight against the Zionist ideology, if you like. They need to fight against the West. That's what he's saying. And then when you see on the streets of D.C. something that took place, a guy, Arab, from Afghanistan, one of these hundreds of thousands that came into the country, over 100,000, unvetted, sufficiently, roaming the streets right now. This is their ideology. Allahu Akbar, they shout. It seems it's been reported. Definitely looks like this is a terrorist attack. And 100%, this is the ideology that's come to America. Is it really about Israel. You have calls for holy war against anywhere, and becoming a mujahideen or a holy warrior in this fight of holy war. And this is what we're seeing take place in the United States. They are connected, and that's why Netanyahu wants people to see that. And the other leaders in Israel want us to see that. It's not Netanyahu, not just Netanyahu. I think most of Israel's leaders, from all the way on the right, all the way to Netanyahu in the center, and all the way to the left, would just disregard what Tucker Carlson said completely, that the Jews actually believe that these people are inherently evil. Like, who says that? That's a thought right out of the mind of the devil, the number one anti-Semite. That's what he would say. That the Jewish people believe that others are from birth wicked, evil, and so on. Now, what you see is indoctrination happening from almost from birth, and you know, this takes place. I mean, this isn't God's world. You've got nations that are bred and peoples that are bred from earliest childhood on hate. And so it's not going to be that surprising when they act on that hate. And you saw it on October 7th, and you've seen it for decades. And now you see it on the streets of Washington, D.C. Now, this is really important to note what's happening in terms of the United States and the increasing noise of anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism, because, as I said, it is a drug that's very dangerous, and it's been dangerous for peoples that engaged it throughout history. And Tucker Carlson, in his narrative, you might think he's a crazy guy now, but he's actually succeeding. He's getting a lot of people in the United States, on the far right, I would say, but even on the far left, to agree with him. And this is like, I do think there is something very potent about anti-Semitism, where you, when like everyone's saying, well, should we platform these people? Should we give them the opportunity to speak? And then we come in and we counter their ideas, right? And then we negotiate with them about their ideas. And we try and disprove their ideas. But really, this is a illogical drug that once you start to become, you engage it and you start to become hooked on it, it's just bad from you, right? Bad right from the beginning. Like it's already capturing your mind. And you know, you could call it some type of spiritual pornography, where it's engaged in, and then the mind has a switch and you've got to keep on going back, and you start to think a certain way that you wouldn't have thought before. And it's just like, it's addictive. And the addictive qualities of that. Now, here you've got anti-Semitism acts in an addictive manner, where you just keep on going back to it. And really, you should just put it to the side completely. Let's not even engage these ideas. Every time these ideas keep on being brought up and brought up and brought up, the end is misery, suffering, destroying of nations. And so it should really be put to the side, but it's not. And I do think maybe at the very beginning, Tucker Carlson thought, well, I really am America first, American isolationist. I don't want to be involved in the Middle East. Israel's in the Middle East. We have to kind of protect our allies sometimes. So let's try and find a way to separate these two. That might have been, you know, how he thought at the very beginning. But as he goes further and further down this path, I mean, it's becoming more and more insane. This is Tucker Carlson on Megyn Kelly. This is going to be clip four, but I want you to recognize what he's doing here. He is trying to separate in the United States the evangelical Christian base that supported Trump. He's trying to paint them out because of their support of Israel, because of their support of Zionism, that they're antithetical to Christianity. So he's trying to push this narrative that if you believe yourself to be a Christian, you cannot support the state of Israel. And is he succeeding in this? Let's just go to clip number four and we'll go through this.
It is totally illegitimate and very specifically unchristian to attack people for their DNA. Like, I hate this group.
You wanted him to hear that.
We all have to hear that. And because that is the basis of Western civilization. Western civilization is derived from the New Testament. It is based on Christian ethics. And the core difference between the West and the rest of the world, not just Israel, but...
So what's interesting about this, again, is if you have listened to this clip, you're like, well, what's he saying about Western civilization is based on Christian ethics? Western civilization is based on the New Testament. He's taking the Judeo out of that, right? It's not the Judeo-Christian ethic or the Judeo-Christian values or even the complete Bible, the Hebrew Bible, the New Testament, Old Testament, New Testament come together and inform our values of Western civilization. No, everything good of Western civilization comes from the New Testament, and that's what we follow, which is just, I mean, he did some research about quotes from the establishment of the United States and how much the Federalist Papers and other founding fathers quote. What do they quote most of? They quote the book of Deuteronomy more than any other text. They even quote it more than the New Testament, more than the Apostle Paul, who Apostle Paul is quoting the Old Testament, and so on. And so this is Tucker Carlson's push. If you're going to be a Christian, even though Christians fundamentally have supported Israel in the past, you've got to recognize that your theology dictates. If you are a follower of Christ, you cannot support the state of Israel. That's what he's trying to do. And he's, you know, largely being successful, I would say, among some. Some on the right. Now, we don't need to take too much time to debate this point. I think it's pretty obvious. Reading the New Testament, follower of Christ, you read the New Testament, you read that, you know, Jesus Christ, when he was fighting against the devil, in Luke 4, Matthew 4, what does he do? How does he fight against the devil? Well, he quotes Deuteronomy. He's quoting the Old Testament. The Pharisees come to Jesus in Matthew chapter 23, and they ask him, what's the great commandment? He doesn't say this new one that he's coming up with. No, he quotes the Old Testament. He says, Deuteronomy, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second one's like to it, love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, they're in the Old Testament. I don't know. I mean, these are quotes from the Old Testament that Jesus Christ, when he came, he said he doesn't even speak his own words. These are the words of the Father based on the Old Testament, and he's using them in a New Testament context. I mean, this is the theology of the New Testament. Of course, the introduction of grace and forgiveness for one's sins based on the sacrifice of Christ is critical, and that can only happen individually, of course. But there's not two separate, you know, they've got the Old Testament, that's done, and then the New Testament, that's what we're following. Well, how did the Apostle Paul, Jesus Christ, the New Testament writers get all their legitimacy for what they were preaching? It was based on the Old Testament plus new revelation that was given by God by the power of the Holy Spirit, and then they can give what's written in the New Testament. But it was based on the law of God in the Old Testament. Paul writes that the law is holy, just, and good. What law? The only law he could be referring to, based on the Old Testament. And so this whole idea that, again, the America is based on the religion of the New Testament, it's fundamentally, theologically incorrect. But what he's trying to do is bust up the Christian right from supporting President Trump. And he is trying to, if you want, put a division in between them and kind of come up with this concept that Israel, or support of Israel, is fundamentally anti-Christian. Now, that's so far from the truth. I mean, even the Apostle Paul supported the Jewish people. It's written all through there. Mr. Flurry's talked about Romans 3, verse 1 to 2, and he says, what advantage of the Jew? They've got lots of advantages. Chiefly unto them were committed the oracles of God, and thankfully they were, because the Bible, if they weren't committed to this people that held onto them, that fought for them, that died for them, that fought against empires like the Seleucid Empire in the second century for the sake of the law, we wouldn't have it. So there's great advantage. Then you go on to the book of Romans. Actually, I want to quote, there's another clip, the next clip from Tucker, clip 5. Let's play that.
And in my religion, the great human hero, in Christianity, Jesus is God in human form. But the great human hero in the New Testament is its primary author, Paul, who was Saul of Tarsus, who was the primary persecutor as a Pharisee of Christians. He was murdering Christians. He was Jewish, by the way, so like everyone in the New Testament, but he was on the way to go murder more Christians, that he met Jesus, and then he became the great evangelist of our faith and wrote the majority of the New Testament. So, like, he's my personal hero.
Read what Paul wrote over and over again about how the Jewish people and what was given to the Jews, and they had a position of esteem. Romans chapter 9, Romans chapter 10, Romans chapter 11, written by Paul. I'll just quote the first few verses there. He says, I'm speaking the truth in Christ. I'm not lying. My conscience bears me witness in the Holy Spirit that I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. For I could wish that I myself were accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brethren, my kinsmen by race. He's like, if the rest of them would respond, I'm willing to sacrifice my eternal life, is what Paul says. They are Israelites. To them belong the sonship, the glory, the covenants, the giving of the law, the worship, and the promises. To them belong the patriarchs, and of their race, of the Jewish race, according to the flesh, is the Messiah. The Messiah came from the tribe of Judah. God, who is over all, be blessed forever. Amen. And so he wasn't there saying there was no benefit to the Jewish people. He said that a lot of those blessings, a lot of those promises that were made to Abraham, they were actually fulfilled and given through the Jewish people. Not all of them, but definitely some of them. Promise of race and grace. Genesis chapter 12, it talks about these two main promises that are given all the way back there in the book of Genesis. And it says that, I'm going to make of you a great nation. You're going to be a multitude of people. That's this promise that God is actually going to fulfill in two of the tribes of Israel, but not the Jews. And you can see that. We'll see that in a second. And then you have the other promise. In you shall all nations of the earth be blessed. As it says in verse 3, this is about the promise of grace that would take place through Jesus Christ, who was of the tribe of Judah. These are inseparable promises. If Tucker Carlson would keep on reading through Romans, you get to Romans chapter 11, and it talks about how you have this olive tree, the native olive tree. This is, as he relates, the nation of Israel, Jewish people coming up. And God gives them the truth. A lot of them didn't listen to it. And so he invited the Gentiles in. He grafted the Gentiles in instead. And then he says, those Gentiles out there, or you could say those Christians that just want to disregard absolutely everything before, don't get too conceited about your position, because just as the native tree was removed and cut down and Gentiles were grafted in, it's even easier to remove the Gentiles into that position and put back the natives. That's what he says. Don't get conceited. Don't get vain about your position in the New Testament church based on the fact that you are now, because of Christ, grafted into this family. And that would be something that would be really good for him and others to read. Don't boast. Don't boast over those other branches. We see a lot of boasting right now over those other branches. I think what we're going to do now is take a really quick break and then come back and talk to you more about these promises that were made to Abraham that actually took place and are given, that are living promises in the Jewish people.
Daily News, Bible prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. We're just talking about some of these promises and the benefit of the Jewish people and the promises given by God to them. What's really interesting and fascinating about this, and all this is brought out in the United States and Britain in prophecy, you're not really hearing anything new today if you've read through this text by Herbert W. Armstrong that focuses on two great promises given to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. We mentioned them briefly. So If we could just go through this a little bit, I think it will just help you understand the importance of this promise and how it has taken place, these promises made to Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12, there's two main promises that are discussed there. And the promise of race, of this great nation that's going to come, and this very populous nation, the wealth that they're going to hold. This would be known in the Bible as the birthright promise. You remember that, as you know, in biblical times, the eldest son typically received both the leadership over the people, the family, and a double portion of the birthright. This isn't because he was extra special in a sense. This was because that he needed to take care of his unwed sisters. Perhaps his father would die, so he has to take care of his mother. He would need more material blessings to take care of others. And then it would make sense that he's actually the leader of the family as well, the other siblings and then their family. So you have the patriarch being the eldest son. And what you see take place in Genesis is something very unique, and that it is split. This promise that would technically go to the eldest son. Now, from Genesis chapter 12 all the way through to the end, this is what Genesis is setting up. It's telling you that these promises are going to be given to Abraham. They're going to be made unconditional. You get to Genesis chapter 22, I'm going to fulfill this. I'm going to make your descendants as the sand of the seashore. And then as many as the sand of the seashore, they're going to possess the gates of their enemies. They're going to be so strong and mighty. And then I'm also going to have this secondary blessing that will be coming through Abraham. And this is the promise of grace. In you, and it's one of your seed, all nations are going to be blessed. So you've got the great nation, or the great company of nations, as is discussed when it gets given to Isaac, of physical, material wealth and population. And then there's another separate promise that is really going to culminate in Jesus Christ. And in him is all nations eventually going to be blessed. So if you go through the book of Genesis, what you've got is this, these two blessings, these two sides of it, they're conferred upon Abraham. They're made unconditional, means God has to do it. And then they go to Isaac. And then they go to Jacob, whose name is going to be changed to Israel. And then what happens? It's really fascinating. This is, as they go to Jacob, Jacob has many sons. He has 12 sons. And one of them is Joseph, and one of them is Judah. The son of Judah belongs to Leah, one of the wives of Jacob. Joseph belongs to Rachel, another one of the wives, the one that Jacob favored. And so once you get to these chapters in Genesis chapter, all the way up to chapter 34 and 5, then you see the scene takes over. The end of chapter 35 is really interesting because it ends with an event that happens with Reuben. Reuben is the oldest son of Israel. And in a normal world, Reuben would be the one to receive the birthright and the leadership over his brothers. But he committed a horrible act. And Jacob said, it's not going to be that way. We're not going to have all the birthright blessings and the leadership blessings come through Reuben. So who do they come through? Well, you keep on reading through the rest of the book of Genesis. And what do you have? From Genesis 37 all the way to the end, it's the story of Joseph, right? Joseph. And then you get to chapter 48, and you have Joseph with his two sons right before Israel. And Israel switches up his hands and he puts a material blessing on them. And he says, let the name of Israel be on them. And they're going to receive part of this birthright. But everyone knows Joseph is included in this history. But what are the rest of chapter 37 all the way to chapter 49? What else is it about? It's about another brother. It's about Joseph being sold into slavery and leading the charge to sell him into slavery is Judah. One of his brothers, brother from a different wife than him, sells him into slavery. And then you have this need to go down to Egypt to escape the famine, and they need to buy food. All the brothers, Joseph's in Egypt. Joseph's in Potiphar's house. He gets thrown in prison. He's in there for years. Eventually he comes out. He's raised in rank to be the prime minister of Egypt to help them navigate the famine that's affecting everywhere. The famine affects Judah or Israel. They cut the land of Canaan. They have to come down and buy things. And you have this whole situation orchestrated where one son stays and then the next son has to come back and stay. Benjamin, who is the brother of Joseph, he has to come down. And what's interesting through this, you have a transition of power. Who's going to represent Israel's interests in front of Joseph, who is the chief of Egypt? Prime Minister of Egypt. Well, it's Judah. For some reason, Judah, the one that sold Joseph into slavery, is receiving a lot of power, not Reuben, receiving a lot of power and authority from his father. And it gets to the point, and we could read this, you can follow along here. This is the critical chapter. This is an interchange between Judah and Joseph. This is chapter 44. And this is basically a situation where Benjamin, the youngest brother, was put in the care of Israel, put in the care of Judah by his father. And Judah said, you know, if Benjamin gets stuck in Egypt, I'm going to trade my life for him, basically. And this is the exact scenario that comes up, that Judah is down there, all the brothers are down there, Benjamin is taken by Joseph, and Judah has to decide, well, I've got to live up to this. And I might have sold my other half-brother, Joseph, into slavery once, but here I am with this, confronted with this opportunity again. What am I going to do for the other son of Joseph? And he says, well, take my life instead. Free. I'll give my life instead of my other brother Benjamin. And we don't have time to go through it. I'd encourage you to read it in Genesis chapter 44. And it's at this moment that you have this great revelation to Joseph, who was sold into slavery by the exact guy that just then was willing to give up his life for his brother. And he says, whoa, something has happened here. And he can't contain himself. And he starts crying. And he's upset over this. The emotion wells up in him. This change in his brother Judah. Now, it is interesting because the rest of the Bible from this point forward, and you go to chapter 49, it's all covered in the United States and Britain in prophecy. It's all about how there was going to be the leadership of the nation that was going to go to Judah. The birthright blessings were indeed going to go to Joseph, but the leadership is going to go to Judah. And Judah is going to go forward. They're going to become the Jewish people. And then eventually King David, this dynasty that comes from King David that's going to be never-ending, would come through Judah. And then Christ, Jesus, the son of David, is going to continue this line from Judah all the way through until he comes in his second coming. And then Jesus is called the Lion of the tribe of Judah. So it's really fascinating to me to see, and upsetting in many ways, to celebrate Thanksgiving. And it's really the joyous situation and praise and thanks to God in its initial for all the material blessings that are given to America, not because of their own doing, but because God bestowed them upon him. It's really an acknowledgement of this first part of the Abrahamic promises. And then at the same time, you have this degradation in America taking place, of respect for the Jewish people, disrespect of the tribe of Judah. And this is the royal line. This is the second part of that Abrahamic promise, is to come through the line of Judah. 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verse 1 and 2 says this. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was the firstborn. It's going to give his genealogy. But for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph. Birthright, the son of Joseph of Israel, which this book brings out. This is America and Britain. These two nations, the United States and Britain in prophecy, received these blessings that went to Joseph, but, and the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright, for Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler. This is the other part of that promise that God made to Abraham. If you want more of that, please do study this. It's absolutely critical. Paul references these two promises in Hebrews chapter 6 as being the foundation, the anchor of our soul and of our hope, because we can see that they're still in existence today. If you celebrated Thanksgiving, you know that this is still in existence today. And that same is said of the second part of that promise, the promise of leadership, rulership, kingship that was to go to the tribe of Judah. That still exists today. So definitely go to thetrumpet.com, request this book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. But since it's a Friday, tradition is that we have to play the World Watch. We can end with that. Thanks very much for listening.
Germany should take over leadership of NATO, Matthew Whitaker, U.S. Ambassador to NATO, told the Berlin Security Conference on November 18th. He stated, "I look forward to the day when Germany comes to the United States and says that we're ready to take over the Supreme Allied Commander position." The statement elicited shock from a German NATO general seated next to him, reported the Times. In wartime, the Supreme Commander would control the deployment of hundreds of thousands of troops, and perhaps even strike with nuclear weapons. Since American troops and equipment form the backbone of these forces, the Supreme Commander has always been American. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz has announced his goal to build the strongest conventional army in Europe. Whitaker praised Germany's massive rearmament as a clear example for other European nations who need to step up. Herbert W. Armstrong warned for decades that Germany would once again lead Europe. The U.S. is pulling away from NATO and encouraging Germany to take a massive step toward dominating the continent. To learn more about the future of the U.S.-Europe alliance, read Atlantic Rift in He Was Right. As the Church of England goes woke, hundreds of Anglican priests are joining the Roman Catholic Church. A report in The Telegraph on November 19th revealed that one-third of Catholic priests ordained between 1992 and 2024 were former Anglican clergy members. That amounts to 700 Anglican and Scottish Episcopalian priests joining the Catholic Church since the Anglican Church's 1992 decision to allow women to become priests. The study, cited by The Telegraph, carried out by St. Mary's University in London, stated that 16 Anglican bishops also converted to Catholicism. This year is the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea, in which the civil government intervened to force the unification of Christian doctrine. Many Christian leaders are using the occasion to advocate for reunification. Herbert W. Armstrong taught for decades that scriptures like Isaiah 47 describe a coming reunification of Catholics and Protestants. To understand what the Bible says about the future of these religious groups, request your free copy of Mr. Armstrong's booklet, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? The European Union plans to take the lead role in training thousands of police officers in the Gaza Strip, an EU official said November 19th. The initial phase includes training 3,000 Palestinian security personnel, with a long-term goal of training 13,000. The details of the plan were discussed at the EU Foreign Affairs Council in Brussels. EU Chief Diplomat Kaya Kallas called the UN's recent resolution for an international stabilization force a game-changer. The EU already has experience training Palestinian police in the West Bank, a step it sees as a prerequisite to an independent Palestinian state. Bible prophecy warns us to closely watch Europe's increasing involvement in Israel and the Middle East. The ongoing peace process between Israel and its enemies will lead to the end-time events prophesied in Zechariah 14 and the fall of half of Jerusalem. To learn more, read Jerusalem in Prophecy. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.